Welcome to our Reach Next Generation podcast. I'm Grace Jeffries, and I'm thinking about my future. To help me with this, I'm speaking with successful women to get an understanding of the challenges they have faced throughout their careers, how they overcame them, and what tips they have for girls of my age. Today my guest is Caroline Pei, who is the Chief Creative Officer and Senior Vice President at Headspace Health, the world's most accessible and comprehensive digital mental health and well-being platform. Thanks for joining me today, Caroline. Can we start by you telling us all how your career took you to Headspace?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Well, my career definitely started in a very different way. Going back to school, I was not very academic, so I studied all of the creative subjects. I went on to art college. And then I actually went to do a degree in advertising, creative advertising, which is basically just coming up with ideas. Once I'd got my degree, I then knew that I wanted to go and work in advertising agencies as a creative. I started in Amsterdam and then got jobs in different agencies in London. So if anyone's interested, Kessels Kramer in Amsterdam, Mother, BBH, Wieden & Kennedy and Grey in London. Yeah. So I had maybe 20-year career working my way up through the advertising industry, creative, then creative director, and then finally a chief creative officer in a London advertising agency.
Yes.
And then I got approached by Headspace to go and do that same role, if you like, so a chief creative officer, but rather than at an advertising agency looking after many, many different accounts and different brands and different projects, I was invited to come and look after the Headspace brand and all of the projects and every way that the Headspace brand comes to life across the channels and across the world.
When you were at school, did you know specifically what you wanted to be, or did that happen more later in life?
When I was at school, I had a lovely time with my friends, and I didn't really concentrate or work as hard as I should have done. And now I wish I had, because imagine the potential that I could have been if I'd have actually tried. But I was lucky in my school that they recognized that when I enjoyed something, I was really good at it. Yeah. So I was the only person in my school that was allowed to actually have all three creative options for GCSE. Normally, and we're talking about late 80s, you were supposed to just have one creative option in your lineup of GCSEs, but they let me study art, music and drama because they could see that I enjoyed it, and therefore I had more chance of success. And then when I went to art college, I actually thought I wanted to work in fashion, so I applied for fashion degrees, and I had one box left on my UCAS form, and that's where I put creative advertising, and the rest is history. So it was very much like I wasn't one of those kids who was really focused and knew an exact career, but I definitely knew it was, the writing was on the wall that it was going to be something creative. And then when I realized that your job in advertising, first and foremost, is to make things up as you go along, I knew that that was the job for me.
Well, what first interested you about Headspace and the mental health kind of sector?
Great question. I was very lucky that I was long-term friends with Rich, who's one of the founders of Headspace. And actually, we were working together and running our own portfolio of clients, him as the business guy and me as the creative person, when he first met Andy Puddicombe, his co-founder, Buddhist monk, superstar. And so I was involved from the outset, but as like an observer to their relationship and how Rich was in awe of Andy and they helped each other. And then, you know, once Rich really felt the benefits of meditation, he was like, I want everybody in the world to feel this. And that's how Headspace was born. So I was very lucky to observe that first meeting and the relationship as it blossomed. So I always had a knowledge and an interest and a love for Headspace, and I was always connected with Rich and Andy if they came to London, and always in touch with Rich for kind of the first 8 years of Headspace. And so it was definitely the people first for me, and obviously the brand that they built before me was really loved and really fun and really cool and did really interesting things. So I was a big fan of the brand. And then I was lucky enough to attend the first ever Headspace event, so I could be taught directly by the man himself live the beginnings of meditation. And then I have meditated ever since, so the space I know is really interesting, the benefits I've felt firsthand. And then now, as we evolve into a broader offering of from, you know, meditation and mindfulness all the way through up to more serious mental health, deeper mental health help. Yeah. I'm personally incredibly passionate about that because I've struggled with anxiety and depression since I was 19. So to be able to work with a brand and for a company that are on a mission to ensure everyone is kind to their mind, then it's my privilege to help make that happen.
Well, it definitely sounds like a really fun place to work. And it sounds like a really nice company. So I know you went to Bournemouth University, but how important do you think it actually is to go to university?
I went to Bournemouth University in like 1995. And I'm sure the whole university experience is probably a bit different now, but my experience was very much around obviously learning about advertising because I didn't know anything, and I learned loads there, and I learned loads about marketing and media and, you know, customer behavior and all sorts of things that have led me to where I am today and are still useful, especially customer behavior in what I do today. But more than that, university was about independence, confidence, friendships, you know, real big life skills that I don't think I would have learned that early on if I hadn't gone away to university. And it was hard. Like, I was homesick and I missed my parents and I didn't have any money. And there was lots of scary learnings that I made. But most of all, I came away from university with a certain confidence and independence that I think is invaluable.
Well, obviously, we've all been hit by COVID with things just beginning to feel normal again. But how have you had to deal with the COVID-19 issues both at work, professionally, and at home, in your home life?
Well, at work, I remember I was living in California when COVID hit, and we shut the office, and within 48 hours, we'd released a free Weathering the Storm course to the world so that we could be there as a support for people we were all going through the same thing, right? So we needed to help people stay calm. We needed to help people be resilient. We needed to help people deal with all of the change and the loss, you know. So we were able to do that at work. So working remotely has been incredibly challenging because my son was homeschooling and I was working, and it was just the two of us at the time, right? So. Yeah. That was challenging. And then I actually moved home after a year of lockdown. So moved back to London from California so that we could be, you know, nearer our loved ones and have our support network around us again, because California is all well and good until no one can see each other and no one can visit. And that is really horrible. So I've been massively affected by COVID, but I feel like in terms of remote working and moving house and Buddy, my son, homeschooling, and now him attending a new school, and none of that would have had to happen unless it was, you know, unless COVID happened. So lots and lots of change, but, and, you know, it was sad to end my California dream, but at the same time, it was really more important to be near the people I love.
Do you think that once everything settles down, you may be able to move back to California, or are you quite now comfortable living in London?
I think my son would kill me if I made him move again. You know, he's your age, so he's about to embark on the really serious bits of school. So I think he's really enjoying his school in London as well. But I think once it all opens up, there'll be way more travel and way more back and forth to California and vice versa. You know, my team want to come and experience London, and we've got a big team now in London. So I think everything will just be way less California focused and more open.
Yeah. So I've read that you are part of the Women's Association. Can you tell me a little bit more about the association and your role in it?
Of course, yeah. I was very lucky to be introduced to the founder, Deborah Williams, at the end of last year. And we actually had our first steering group committee last Friday. So it's all quite new to me. But I am extremely excited and privileged to be part of it. Deborah is a phenomenal young woman. And if you want me to introduce you, if you want to get her on your podcast, I would highly recommend it. She was a hardcore student studying the lack of women sat on boards. And she was, as she was researching it, not only was she finding out so much information that felt unfair, she also felt so motivated to do something about it. And that's how the Women's Association was born. Yes. And we are there not only to connect young girls with women in leadership roles, but also to be a force for good to change the system. So my role is on the steering committee, is just there to support and hopefully offer my skills in everything I've done for the last 25 years to Deborah and to the team.
So even if you are at home or if you're in the office, is there one part of your day working with Headspace that you look forward to the most?
So many. I mean, one part of the day that I miss and that we try to kind of reconstruct online is the daily meditation. So pre-COVID, sometimes 100 of us would come together in the reception of HQ in Santa Monica every morning at 10 a.m. and we would meditate together. Often that would be a recorded meditation, so a bit of content from the app coming through the speakers. But occasionally Andy would come and do a live meditation with 100 of us in the office, and that was the best way to, there is no better way to start the day than that. But nowadays we have an international team and we have twice a week something called International Mind Athletes, where one of our teachers will host a live meditation or a live mindfulness exercise on Zoom. And that really, they're the highlights of my working week. Aside from that, I'm very lucky that I've got the most phenomenal team of writers and designers, illustrators and animators. So lots of my working day is creative reviews where people bring their work and I help to critique it and give them direction to make it better. So that is without a doubt the highlight of my job, is listening to brilliant ideas and seeing beautiful work and you know, great writing and extraordinary illustration from my team often.
Well, the world is changing so much and super quickly. What do you think work for women might be like in 10 years' time?
You know, the biggest change that I'm looking forward to is when parenting isn't a mother's responsibility anymore.
Yeah.
And in a traditional heterosexual couple, it takes two to make the baby, so it should take two to bring up the baby. And I think society at the moment doesn't reflect that. Yeah. So a future where we can see equal parenting or more support for solo parents, so that having a child doesn't hold you back in your career expectations and aspirations, I think would be something that I'm very excited for the next generation to experience.
Definitely. I hope that I'm able to kind of be a part of that and grow up in that part. So there's also a lot of talk about pay equality generally. How well do you think women are catching up with men's salaries and getting those top jobs, particularly in advertising and media?
I mean, you could argue it's better than it was, but it's definitely far from perfect. Yeah. I think that it's two-sided, right? So obviously we can negotiate harder and learn better how to fight for the right pay and the right roles and the right seat at the table. But until the system changes and until the decision makers change, we can only go so far. You know, I've come across three bosses in my life that have completely shut me down and stood in my way from progressing where I was working. So I just left and went and did it somewhere else. But I think it's like, it's us women fighting for what we deserve. but it's also educating or removing the older generations or the more traditional closed-minded generations from, you know, actualizing our potential.
Definitely. So throughout your work, your career, and even when you were a child, have you had any mentors, or have there been any people that you've particularly admired?
Absolutely. I never had a female boss until 2021.
Oh, really?
So that was quite interesting, that I'd never had like a pure female role model in which to model myself on.
Yeah.
My mom and my sister had been hugely influential in my life, but in terms of like bosses or people in my industry, I would say Robert Saville, who is the founder of Mother, has been my absolute biggest mentor from day one. Mm. And then my partner, Vicky Maguire at Grey, was hugely influential on me from the get-go, when we were both working in an agency together. She was a huge mentor and friend, and then eventually my partner as co-CCO at Grey. So
yeah,
those people.
So as part of our Reach Next Generation Summit, we look at diversity and opportunity for young girls from the Black and minority communities. Do you think that we are seeing a more inclusive society since the Black Lives Matter conversation started?
I think we're seeing a lot of people publicising what they're doing. Whether they're actually living that day to day is a different thing. I think the lack of role models, especially for girls of colour, is even more dire than I had growing up. But yeah, it's, you know, in this age of kind of armchair activism, my worry is that people talk a lot about DE&I, but not sure they're acting on it.
Yeah. Well, let's hope it progresses and soon. So I have really enjoyed chatting with you today, Caroline. Thank you so, so much. And I'm sure everyone listening will now be thinking about some of the choices they're about to make in their careers. Keep listening to the Reach Next Generation podcasts as I talk to many more brilliant women. For more details about us, visit reachnextgeneration.com. And thank you to Levi Strauss, Ideal Standard, Sage PLC and Haynes Watts for their fantastic support.